You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh my God, it's early.
Minutes after 8 on a Friday. Joining me is a man who had a similar experience to me because he's known Monique and Jocelyn Lammerer since they were kids, Kim Holmes.
Yeah.
How excited were you to watch that hockey game the other night?
Well, the first day when it was live, it was the middle of the night here.
Right.
And I thought I was going to have a heart attack when it went into OT. And then when it went to the shootout, I said, I'm going to die. And then when Jocelyn, well, first when Monique tied it up at 2-2, and then Jocelyn won it in the second shootout, tears streaming down my face. And then I watched it again during the regular day, normal day, when hockey games are usually played, and I was still uptight. I knew how it was going to end, but I was still sitting on the edge of my seat. I thought, oh, my God, this is a great game. And so I got to see it twice, and then all their interviews and stuff. I was so happy for that family as well as the kids, the girls, and the women, I mean. They were just magnificent. Just magnificent.
Yeah, pretty exciting.
And to read about it in the paper, all the training they went through with that Swedish coach the last 4 years and all the extra work they put in, it paid off. And
I think he's from Finland, unless you start an international incident.
Well, it's Sweden in the paper.
Oh.
I thought Finland, too, but it said Sweden in the paper.
It did, really? Yeah, I thought
I think so.
Because he brought a bunch of...
It doesn't matter. He's not from here. He's from Scandinavia, and he's the one that taught him the oops move. Or yeah. As they...
oops, I did it
said
again.
In the paper today, the star-spangled dangle. Because that Canadian goalie... was flat on her face, did a face plant on the ice, and was clueless to where the puck was when it went into net.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you one of the other funny things is seeing the comments that National Hockey League players made about it. Like, what was that? Because if you look at it just as a feat, if you look at the goal that she scores in the shootout, it's just a physical feat. I mean, it's a movement with her feet, her head, her shoulders, and the stick, and then all of that sells the fake, and then to be able to take that all that stuff that's going that way and then pull it back and go the other way, it's not an easy event. It's a 9.9 on a difficulty, you know, scale.
Well, I'd say it was a 10 on a 10. Because there were three fakes in that shot, and that goalie had no idea where the puck was going next. When she pulled it back in and flipped her wrists over and then went back to her forehand, I mean, oh, my God, you've got to be kidding me. And then it was neat to hear what the NHL players were saying.
Yeah. Yeah, they were laughing. They were like, what?
That too.
Exactly. I need that. I need that, but I don't know that I could do that. I got a number of text messages this morning, and I haven't discussed it, about the police officer who didn't go in that school. I'll just say this. I've wondered about that since it happened. Where was that guy? That campus ain't that big. That if you take off on a run, you can't get to the other side of that thing in 60 seconds. So I think we've all waited to hear about that. And the truth is not good. And I say this, the most unkind fate that can befall a combatant in combat, okay,
yeah.
So that when we're in Iraq and Afghanistan and wherever the hell else we may fight, is when you know that it's your fault and other people were killed or wounded, because nobody can rescue you from that fate. That every night in your quiet time,
yep.
And in the quiet place in your brain, you know that your negligence and your failure caused other people to die.
Yep.
That guy will not have another peaceful day the rest of his life. I don't know if that's enough of a sentence for somebody who took an oath to protect children and could have intervened in it and didn't because he was afraid for his own life. He didn't know what was going on. He was scared. Hey man, I use as an example a young man, and I need to learn his name. But he was on the Red Lake, Indian Reservation in Northwest Minnesota. This might be 10 years ago. He confronted an armed shooter outside the school, was shot in the unarmed. He was unarmed. He confronted this an armed shooter outside the school, and his action saved that event from being a huge event, right?
Yeah.
That guy had balls, okay? Because to move against a shooter when you're unarmed, you don't know how that's going to turn out. So he will never have – he can move anywhere in the world he wants to. He will never have a peaceful day, but I don't know that that's enough of a punishment for children. And I just, reading that yesterday, extremely discouraging, because look, he couldn't have saved everybody, but maybe the number wouldn't have been 17. Maybe it would have been, you know, maybe it would have been less than 10. Maybe it could have been 16 and somebody would still have their baby with them. But it's a horrible story. And one other thing, on this date 73 years ago, I did not forget. Marines of the 28th Marine Regiment went up the face of Mount Suribachi on a patrol, and they planted a flag. A little while later, they put up a second flag that became the subject of a very very famous photograph. One of the most famous photograph from World War II. And then, lo, 70 years later or so, the Marine Corps finally figured out who the hell was in that flag raising. So good for us. It doesn't say the requirement is to be perfect. You just got to get it right at some point. So today we remember that event that happened. The battle would go on for, lo, another month. And there was a lot more killing to be done on that island as the United States Marines and the Japanese Imperial Army fought above and below ground for that island. But 73 years ago today, that event happened. So our thoughts and prayers and honor and respect go out to the men that are still alive. There's not that many of them, but they're out there. So to them, and certainly to their families. Who I'm sure some suffered underneath it and whatnot. So that goes on today. And then there was one other comment that somebody made that I was going to mention, but I've forgotten about it. So there you have it. Hey, Kim, do you think as you get older and you don't remember things, do you think is there something wrong with you? Or is it that, look, when you're 20, you don't have shit.
Yeah.
You don't have shit to remember. When you're 60, Dude, that's a lot of stuff to remember, man. How am I going to remember all the things I said and did? There's anything wrong with that.
No, there's not. I mean, I turn 74 next month.
Ooh.
And I remember, songs from the 50s. And I can't remember what my wife said to me last week. And it is part of age, and that's showbiz.
Yeah, I don't think that there's anything.
You gotta carry on, man. You can't dwell on the fact that you don't remember shit. You just move on and try and remember as much as you can. And that's about all I can say to it. Because if I dwell on all the stuff I forget, I'd be depressed all the time.
Yeah, see, so I'm doing this, I'm filling out these physical things, and they're asking me questions. Do you have memory issues? I said, well, I don't think I do. My kids do. I said, but come on, I'm 60. I got a lot of stuff to remember. I've done a lot of shit. It's not like I've been standing around doing nothing my whole life. So when somebody says, hey, do you remember the time that you did this, 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 or this? And I say, no. Then, like, somebody says, oh, that's a big deal. No, it's not. Come on. So, I don't know.
Hey. Started getting old, baby.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, and again, it's not. I'm not worried about it. So,
and you're still a young stud. So, and you're in good shape, great shape. So, and that's part of it by staying in shape.
You think it is that affects your brain?
It helps your brain. Like you run every day, that helps your brain.
Duh. Interesting. All right. I'm up for that. I just don't think that, it's like, oh, he forgot something. Like, come on. Look, if you did what I did in my life, I haven't, like I said, I've done some shit in my life. Like, I just didn't do one thing. Come on.
The thing is, Mac, you're still alive.
That's a low bar.
Well, no, it is a high bar.
No, it's not. No, being alive, come on.
You know that story that I think I've told you about my 70th birthday party? All my friends...
I can't remember.
My friends from the East Coast were out here to celebrate.
Yeah.
I put them up in a hotel and paying for their meals and stuff for the weekend. And they were leaving the table in the restaurant Saturday night to go up the bar and have a few more bumps. And, there were 12 of us, as they walked by me, they all dropped $10 in front of me. I says, what the hell is this for? I got very indignant. And they says, oh no, Holmes, it's not a tip. We all lost the bet. You're still alive. You know, so you never miss an opportunity to, you know, mess with somebody. But yeah, well, you forget stuff. That's all.
All right.
That's how I'm looking at it.
All right. The one more serious story that I wanted to get to before we can talk about other things. I don't know if people remember the story about in a VA hospital, a veteran was pushing the button and was kind of gasping as he died, asking for help, and the nurses were laughing. I don't know if his family had placed a camera in the room or whatnot. I believe that's what happened. But two nurses and an aide were indicted, Tuesday of this week on multiple charges, including one charge of felony murder, for the February 27, 2014 death of James Dempsey, a World War II veteran and patient at the Northeast Atlanta Health and Rehabilitation in Georgia. The 89-year-old Navy vet who later retired from the Army National Guard died as he gasped for air and his pleas for help went ignored by the staff, according to Georgia NBC affiliate 11 Alive, which first broke the story. On Tuesday, a grand jury in DeKalb County handed down charges to former licensed nurse practitioner Lois Pinkett, nursing supervisor Wanda Knuckles, and Mabel Thurman, a certified nurse assistant. One faces charges of felony murder and neglect to an elder person. Another faces charges of depriving an elder person of essential services. And the third face was indicted for neglect of an elder person. The investigation into Dempsey's death was launched in November 2017 after the TV station uncovered footage from a hidden nanny cam placed in the room by Dempsey's son and gained access to previously sealed court depositions from nursing home staff. The video shows Dempsey repeatedly calling for help and crying out that he could not breathe, though nobody immediately responded. One of the video's worst moments shows the nurse Knuckles laughing as the staff tried to start an oxygen machine. When asked by attorneys for Dempsey's family what she thought was so funny at the time, Knuckles said that she couldn't recall. So I think a lot of people have seen the video, and it's pathetic. It's pathetic that this man is breathing his last breaths, calling for help, and you have nurses that didn't respond, and then when they did, they're laughing and joking, and then he dies. It's pathetic. But anyway, so on that cheery note, you've had a great week, though. Come on, you're a gold medalist at the Olympics.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah.
I live in the town where those two young women were born and raised, and a great hockey family. The whole family was featured in Sports Illustrated, if you remember.
Yeah, a few years
ago.
In fact,
I think I sent you the picture.
Yeah.
Was given to me by Linda Lamoureux of the them standing by the pond that they make in every winter.
Yeah, there's a coulee that's across the cul-de-sac from where Pierre and Linda's home is, and that coulee we lived a block away from that, and so. The kids could eat it. So there was a light that I think a guy by the name of Mike Delisle put up in his backyard that could shine onto the coulee. And so that was another neighbor, and the Delisle boys played hockey. And then they would, they had a net down there, and, you know, you'd find the kids either at the park where a lot of kids hung out or in the coulee playing close to their house. And, And you, in fact, there was an interesting interview there. The number two son is, his name is Jacques. He went to the Air Force Academy. I think he's a captain in the Air Force now, stationed at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio. There's an interview done with him, and he says, you know, he got asked, did you teach her that move? And he said, yeah, she didn't get that move from me because I don't have that one in my repertoire. And he said, you know, but I will say this, the thing they did get from us is their grit. Because when they played with us, we didn't cut them any slack. And Patrick still, I think, has a scar on the back of his cap from when Jacques hacked him playing. Patrick's probably 4 years younger than Jacques. So they're playing down at the park. And so Jacques has the puck, and he's moving up the ice. Patrick comes from behind him, right? And he lifts it, he puts his stick under Jacques, flips Jacques' stick up, grabs the puck, and then curls to go the other way. Jacques curled right behind him and laid the wood to the back of Patrick's legs. Whoosh! Patrick went down. Jacques took the puck and went the other way. So Jacques was not a very nice kid when you played against him. And that's the way those girls got brought up playing. And he said, we didn't cut them any slack. If they were going to play with us, they better play. And they were going to take it when it came their way, or they weren't going to play with us. And it's a pretty cool interview done with one of their older brothers. Two of their brothers are playing in Europe, playing professional ice hockey in Europe.
Yep. Mario.
And Philippe.
And Philippe,
Or Phil, as he's known in the neighborhood. But, No, they're just, but just, you know, tickled pink, if people can't tell from the shows that I've done.
I couldn't be happier for that family.
Right, right.
I just, it's absolutely, the coolest.
And let me tell you, and this is just a little, this is funny. Pierre is a pretty serious guy. Yes?
Yeah.
he is a no-nonsense parent, too. And he used to get criticized for being too hard on his kids. You know, oh, those Lamoureux, you know. Oh, Pierre, he's such a hard ass. And he's a great guy, but he has standards and he doesn't compromise. And neither does his wife. And their standards are their standards. And they don't give a crap what anybody else thinks. And their kids have been made to always. And it's kind of interesting. The people I know with standards... who do two things. They're fun parents and love their kids, but they don't compromise on their standards. For whatever reason, those people raise good kids.
Yes.
And I think there's the Twin Towers is having standards and not compromising, and the other one, loving and having fun with your kids. If you can put that combination together, you create an irresistible push on your children to achieve. To be everything that they can be and not to settle for not achieving or whatnot. And so very, very interesting. But he was like persona non grata in different circles because, you know, he was too much of a hard ass. So, and again.
He ran a tight ship, but look at the results, man.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, and they were, I mean, everywhere they've gone, they have always been, you know, the Lamoureux girls. And I'll tell you, one of the things that's really cool, can you imagine, Kim, doing that with your twin brother or sister?
Yeah.
How fun would be?
Oh, it would be as much fun as you could have.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I'll read you a text message. Mac, this is almost fairy tale kind of stuff. You're there with your twin sister, and you both play prominent roles, one scoring the tying goal and one scoring the winner. It's kind of hokey. If you brought this to Disney and say, hey, I've got an idea for a movie, there's going to be twins and they're going to go to the Olympics and they're going to win the Olympics. Like, okay.
Well, there'll be a movie made, that's for sure.
Okay, how about we dial it back a little bit and we just take some of the goofiness out of it? Oh, it's not goofy. So, no. So pretty cool, pretty cool, pretty cool, pretty cool. Here's another email. Interesting comments about nobody being able to rescue that guy. I think most people are speechless when they heard that news yesterday. I was like you, Mac. I wondered, where the hell was this guy? Why didn't you read that at some point during the event that he showed up on scene and took control? When I didn't read that, I think I instinctively knew that something was wrong there. Because there is no way, I don't care if he's out on the blacktop with the guys doing automotive maintenance, when you hear those noises, and for those of us who know the sound of weapons, when you hear that pop, 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 you know what it is. Other people may not, but we do. He should have dropped whatever he was doing, drawn his pistol, and sprinted to wherever he had to be in order to intervene in that incident. Shame on him. He will live a life filled with torment. And how he can ever show his face in public again is beyond me. Absolutely pathetic. Now, you know what, again, and not one part of me feels sorry for him. Okay? That was a deliberate selfish.
Why should it?
That is a deliberate, because you're gonna hear, oh well, he was a victim and he was afraid, and hey, look, when you put your hand up and you take that oath to support defend the Constitution, to protect other people, it may be your day. It's not simply about collecting your 100% pension at the highest level I ever worked at for the county. It's simply not about that when you're in that capacity. It may be your day, like that kid up at Red Lake, up on the Red Lake Reservation, unarmed.
Yeah.
Unarmed. I wonder what he was getting paid an hour. Probably not shit. So I need to find out that guy's name. All right. The Matt, can I ask a food question? Because you keep going off on different rants. Look, I'll rant in between questions. Don't get into me. Of course you can.
Yeah, you can rant after the show.
I'm looking at different mustards. I even saw a seasoned mayonnaise that to me tastes like mustard that's French. Could the chef explain the difference between mayonnaise and seasoned mustard because they taste an awful lot alike? Is that true? I thought mayonnaise was mayonnaise and mustard was mustard.
Mayonnaise is mayonnaise, but my guess is what he's talking about is the French Dijon mustard, which is light mustard color and has like consistency of mayonnaise and has wine in it. And that's called a Dijon mustard. And that's you've seen that. You used to see those commercials about Grey Poupon.
Yeah, Grey Poupon.
Grey Poupon. And that's probably the most well-known mustard outside of just yellow mustard, French's yellow mustard, that most everybody puts on their hot dogs. But now there's horseradish mustard. There's honey mustard. There's dozens of different types of mustards. The thing is if you want a hot mustard, you can get a horseradish brown spicy mustard. You can get a sweet mustard, honey mustard. It's what your taste. That's the beauty of mustards, is you try a couple and see what you like. And
take it from
there. You hook yourself up with it.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what, just comment on this kind of generally. The food industry has exploded with all kinds of different variations based a lot on what people see on TV and the explosion of cooking as a hobby. I mean, it's always been popular, but now with these foods, I think you see more and more choices in condiments, choices in sauces, all kinds of different things. Is that explosion, is that true and real, or is it just me not knowing what's going on?
No, it's absolutely. The food industry has exploded because this country has taken an interest in cooking, not just what our grandmothers made and their mothers before that, the recipes that were cooked in the old country that made the transition to this country. And now we've refined these different methods and done different things with the ingredients, added things, taken things away. You look at these cooking programs with, now they have, Gordon Ramsay has a MasterChef Junior on it, on the TV, which I love to watch because they're all real young kids between the ages of about 11, 12, and 14, and they have these cooking competitions, and they blow most adults away, and that's because they read, and they watch TV cooking shows, and cooking competitions. And when I went to Europe in 1970, there was only one chef school, serious chef school, and that was the Culinary Institute of America that started up in 1970 or 71, when I was in Europe. And, And now there's all kinds of chef schools all over the country. And, with TV, it's exploded. And the interest has exploded with, young people and adults as well. And so, hence that's why we have a show on All Marine Radio about cooking, because people are interested in food. And it's not just throwing a hot dog on a grill and turning it black.
Absolutely.
Or doing a hamburger and pressing all the juice out of it with the Bismarck press. somebody cooks a hamburger medium rare now.
There you go.
So it's fantastic. I love it myself. I think it's very cool.
Right. No, and you see all that stuff in now just local food choices, and you're like, it certainly had an impact on mainstream food. What do you think the biggest impact on mainstream food has been from kind of the explosion of cooking on TV?
Sauces and different methods of cooking meat. What we're going to do today is talk about, if we have time, cooking a ham and what type of ham we're going to cook and how we're going to apply, the sauce and then the breadcrumbs. So, it's just really exploded. Another thing that has really changed is bread baking. And before, it was pretty much Wonder Bread I grew up with, and build your bodies 12 ways, and have a loaf of Wonder Bread, which you could compress into two slices, and now they have, there's all kinds, wheat bread, rye bread. Well, rye bread's been around since Europe, but it's fascinating, to see how the industry and the baking has changed in the last 30 years.
Interesting. No, I even a pedestrian person that doesn't cook very much like me notices, not only when you go shopping, but also just on TV. You know, the plethora. There's not a news show on TV that is the morning shows, or the noonday shows that doesn't include cooking as a regular significant part of the program anymore. It's been interesting. We're going to talk about ham here. The Easter ham is how did ham get associated with Easter? Simply because we weren't going to eat turkey again?
Yeah. And butchering a hog and curing it, for anywhere from 6 months to a year. And you salt that ham back in the day because that's how you, maintained it from spoiling. And then you bake the ham on Easter. It just seems to be tradition. Since I grew up, that's what we had on Easter was ham. Easter ham. And it's like it was one word. And it was usually a bone-in ham, and it was a whole solid ham. But today, a few years ago, well, maybe, I don't know, 10 or 12 years ago, they came up with a cooked spiral ham that's pre-cut. That's what we're going to do today, because it's a great one to do. It's simple to do. It's, you don't have to spend a lot of time, put it in before you go to church, take it out when you come home from church, or start it off when you come home from church, and it'll be ready by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. When usually you have your Sunday suppers, 2 to 3, 2 to 4 in the afternoon. So, we're going to do a spiral ham with the glaze, and then breadcrumbs on that.
So let's talk about that. So first of all, spiral ham, is that what you said?
Yes, sir.
What
and
is
it has the bone in it.
What is that? What is the spiral ham?
Okay. It's a ham with the bone in that they pre-cook it, and then they have this wire or this machine or something that cuts a spiral. So it, when you slice down on the bone, individual slices, the consistent same thickness, come off, and so you don't have to carve a ham like you hold the bone, and you just, you know, there's a flat side to the ham that you put on your carving board. You just cut it straight down, take your knife and cut it right along the bone, and pieces fall off. You arrange them on a platter and serve it. And then you have a mustard sauce or whatever you want to do to put on top of it. It's phenomenal. And, it makes it, it's a pretty easy, way to serve ham now. So you don't have to, buy, you know, there are a lot of pre-cooked hams that have been deboned, that you can just score the top and put a coating on and put it in the oven. And with the spiral ham that we're going to do, it's already pre-cooked, so you're just going to, prepare it. You cover it and you heat it for a couple hours at 200 or 300 degrees. And,
okay, hold on. So when we say crumb coated, how do we, you know, so we got the ham with the bone in. First of all, what kind of crumbs are you using? And then
I'm going to use panko breadcrumbs.
Panko
breadcrumbs. Japanese dried breadcrumbs. It's white. And then when you bake it or you fry with it, you coat something and fry it, it turns a golden brown.
Ooh.
And it's
okay. So
it's
all right. So I got that piece. So what am I going to coat the ham with in order to get the breadcrumbs to stick?
You're going to coat the ham with a sauce that's made of brown sugar, mustard, dry mustard, a little balsamic vinegar, or if you want to use regular apple cider vinegar, you can use that. Ground ginger, ground clove, and then you heat this up, and so all the flavors incorporate, and some people use, we used them when I started doing it, would just take honey and mustard, mix it together, and smear over the ham. But this is a whole different process. And when you pull the ham out, you have it covered. You'll see it in the article we sent you, and I'm sure you posted it. You put a cooking bag over the ham and to keep the moisture in, and you cook it slow. And the internal temperature only is 100 degrees when you pull it out. And with the spiral ham, you have all these crevices. So you brush the glaze on, and then you take the plastic gloves, like surgical gloves kind of things, and then you pat the panko breadcrumbs on the glaze, which will be sticky, and then you put that back in the oven. You turn the oven up to 400 degrees, and then you cook that for 15 to 20 minutes or 20 minutes and until the panko turns from white to a golden brown.
Ooh.
And so by putting the glaze on, brushing the glaze on, and getting it in the crevasse, where the spiral was cut, the breadcrumbs stick to that glaze. So, and that's how you get it to stick. And, if you, don't want to get intense as we're doing here, you can just do honey and your favorite mustard and still cook the ham the same way and heat it up and then pull it out. Brush this on. You have to heat that sauce up because it's got to be warm. And then you brush that on the ham, and then you pat the breadcrumbs on. And that's all you have to do. And then put it back in the 400-degree oven and have at it. And then when it comes out of the oven,
that's pretty simple.
You let it rest for 15 minutes, and then you slice down the bone. All the pieces will fall off, and you place them on a serving platter and serve it up with your side dishes.
Okay, so what is there any kind of sauce that you use with the ham, or do you just serve it just like it is?
You make a hot mustard sauce, which includes water, dry mustard. You know, you're making dry mustard. It's called Coleman's dry mustard. It's a powder, and it's you mix that with water, and that's what Chinese mustard is, or it's very close. It's very hot, but you put in water, mustard, salt, Dijon mustard, and then honey.
Ooh.
And so you have this sweet mustard flavor with a little heat.
Little heat. We love that.
That sauce sits. What?
I said we love that. We love that heat.
Oh, God, me too. I just, I used to take Coleman's mustard and add a little beer to it and just mix that up, and I'd have a hot mustard. And, you know, you don't pour a whole beer in there. You drink most of the beer, but you put enough beer in there, instead of water, and then you make it, it'll be thick. The thicker you want, the more mustard you add. And you have that balance between the mustard and the beer to get the right consistency you want. And then you can put that on a sandwich, or you can put it on meat, whether it's roast beef or ham or turkey, whatever you want, the sandwich you're making. It's killer, killer good.
The,
but it's called Coleman's prepared mustard, and it's hot.
Coleman's
it's
prepared
about close to wasabi mustard. Well, wasabi is actually a horseradish, Japanese horseradish, but it's about as close a heat. It's more of a, like a Chinese, hot Chinese mustard.
Right.
Okay?
You know what? I had ham this week, earlier this week, maybe. Yeah, and let me tell you, even if you just do my mom used to do this, and this is what I had the other night, but it was just a basic ham, right, bone in,
yeah,
with some kind of brown sugar over the top of it. If you serve that with scalloped potatoes, why is that?
Oh, yeah, that's going to be our side dishes.
Why scallop potatoes and ham is to die for.
Well, it's like bread and butter.
Right.
You have to have scallop potatoes with ham. It's like it's you're un-American if you don't eat that.
That's a fact.
I don't mean to be so militant, but
you can be.
You have to eat scallop potatoes with ham. That's the way it is.
It is the way it is. It is straight up the way it is, and no, and it. But I'll tell you what, it tastes. You know, when I first heard we were having ham, I said, ham? What is that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I had one and then I need to cook it. Okay. So, and then you get there and you have ham and scalloped potatoes and it's delicious. It is absolutely delicious.
Yeah. And your favorite veggie.
Yeah. But it's not one of our go-to. Okay. Talk to us about scalloped potatoes. Because that's something that we've all eaten. I think most people don't eat it homemade. They buy it in a box, which to me is just as good. I've been eating it my whole life. But talk to us about scalloped potatoes. Anything you can do with it?
Yes. I'm going to send you two recipes that I have out of, or you might have it. In fact, you have Beth's cookbook, Sanders Sauces.
Yes.
The Sanders sauces. Okay. There are two recipes you can take a picture of on page 15. And they're a baked cheese potatoes. Do you remember those five cheese potatoes I used to use?
No.
Serve at Sanders?
No, I don't remember.
And, well, you don't remember. Okay. It was cooked cube potatoes. I made a bechamel sauce that's flour and butter, equal portions, stirred first in a skillet until you cook it over medium heat for about 12 to 15 minutes until it gets a nutty smell to it, which means you're cooking the flour taste out of it. It's still kind of a golden pale golden color, and then you add milk, and that's called making a bechamel sauce. And that is, you add milk to that, and you can make it as thick as you want. And when you're doing scalloped potatoes, you don't want it too thick, but you want it to be able to the sauce to coat a spoon easily. And then you dice up, you cube potatoes, you cook them, but not overcook them.
Right. What does that mean?
Because you're going to put this mixture in the oven for at least 30 minutes.
Okay, when you say cook them, are we boiling them? Are we baking them? What are we doing?
We're going to boil them. We're going to cube them. And then we're going to, I like to cook them with the jackets on, but you can peel them if you're prissy. But I like potato skins. That's just the kind of guy I am. But, peel the potatoes, cube them about 1 inch to 1.5 inch cubes, and you boil them in salted water, and you pull them out, when they're just about done. You don't want them mushy, and you don't want to overcook these potatoes. So just when they're about done, then you drain them, and then you butter a baking dish. But first, you drain them, and then you dump them into the bechamel sauce and stir them up. Now, me personally, I like to put raw onions in there.
Ooh.
Sliced raw onions, red onions. And then you butter a baking dish. And then you put that mixture in the oven. Or no, you put that mixture in the baking dish. And then you have a mixture of, you can use breadcrumbs, panko breadcrumbs, and you grate a little Parmesan cheese, and you put it over. Now, for me, that's a basic scalloped potato. Now, my five cheese potato is you take this light bechamel sauce. I add two cups of shredded Gruyere cheese, that's a Swiss cheese, provolone cheese, that's an Italian cheese, Monterey Jack, mozzarella. Now I add those four cheese, and then a separate, I have put a half a cup of shredded parm, a half a cup of breadcrumbs. Now you hold those on the side because that's going to cover all this potato and bechamel mixture. And then you cover that. You put that in the baking dish. You cover that and you slide it in the oven uncovered until, if you use panko, it takes longer to brown those. So 20 minutes at least, and then look at it, and then when you see the bechamel sauce kind of bubbling around the side, that means that the potato and the top is golden brown. Then you pull it out, and then you have at it. You can let them sit before you take it to the table, but not for very long. No more than put it and let it rest for 5 to 10 minutes before you serve it. There you go. Now, there are two ways to do scalloped potatoes.
You know, and yeah, that's a classic American dish, ham and scalloped potatoes. And upgunning your scalloped potatoes makes that awesome. All right, what do you you got big plans for the weekend? Anything exciting going on?
I'm still basking in the glory of the
Olympic gold medal.
Yes, I am. And I'll see. I know the men curlers.
Yeah,
up to Canada, and they're playing, I think, Sweden for the gold medal tonight, actually.
Wow.
So I'm not a big curler, but I learned about it when I worked in Switzerland in the Alps. And it's the last weekend of the Olympics, and then it's the March Madness with college basketball, and then at the end of March 28th is opening day for the major leagues. And away we go, babies.
Another chance for your Dodgers.
Another chance for my Dodgers. They still kept Robert, so we'll see if he can think on his own without looking at a spreadsheet.
He can't. He can. Hey, we're more committed to that approach this year than we were last year. Oh my god.
Yeah, my god.
Why don't we just stick a robot down there? They can do that, and then we'll get a HR specialist to solve the problems in the clubhouse, and we'll just get a robot to with artificial intelligence. They can go ahead.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be something if the AI robot said, "Yeah, we're not going with that. We're going with this. He's doing too good today."
What? Yeah, and you can scream at him, and he won't bench you.
Yeah, exactly.
He just says, "I do not compute."
Yeah, like the robot in Lost in Space. Danger, Will Robinson.
Oh, God.
All right.
Yeah, it's they have a pretty good spring coming up.
Yeah, and if you check it out, Major League Baseball exhibition games start today. So
yep, they do.
Yeah, so
I forgot that they did, but thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, so
I will follow my boys, and also you've got me following the Yankees, but I've got a new team. I'm going to follow Houston this year because of there's a youngster that used to pitch for the Sioux when they had baseball before they dropped it, and he's in the Houston organization. And last summer, he went from single A to triple A. So he's invited to training camp this year for Houston.
Oh, wow.
So Tom, his cousin is the freshman goalie for the Sioux now. So I'm interested to see. I hope he can make it. If he's developed, he's got a pretty close to 100-mile-per-hour fastball, but he's got to develop some other pitches, you know.
Yeah, we are. The what just so everybody knows, when Kim refers to the Sioux, what he's referring to is the name that the University of North Dakota used to be called by. They no longer are called by that, and so he's still a man stuck in the past, which is one of the things we love about him. So,
well, and you know what else I wanted to bring up to
what,
you?
What else,
if
Pumpkin?
You have a minute, is that president that they hired out there has interviewed for a president's job at the Central Florida.
What?
And he comes in, he cuts women's hockey, and now he's going to put his head between his legs and run out to Florida. It just...
Oh. No, you know what, Kim? Good luck to him. I hope he gets it. Get his ass... He's an idiot.
Yeah, I do too, because I...
Get his ass out of town.
Yeah, get him out of town, because he wasn't well-received here
no,
after that.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. Yeah, and just so everybody knows, the hockey program that spawned the most Olympic hockey players that played in the
yes.
Olympics got eliminated,
yes.
got eliminated by the University of North
yeah.
Dakota. So, anyway, all right, sir. Well, you have a great weekend.
You too, Mac.
Happy.
And,
thank you,
All Marine Radio. And next week, we're going to answer all your questions about hams, scalloped potatoes, and everything else you want to know about Easter dinner.
Got it.
If you're interested in cooking lamb, we'll talk about that, because that's another thing I like to have at Easter.
Lamb. All right. You know, now I'm again.
What?
Now I have, a hankering for to have scalloped potatoes and a ham again. I have it in my head.
Oh, good. I've done my job then.
Nice. All right. Well done. All right, Maestro, I will talk to you. Have a good one.
You too, man. Thank you very much for the day.
There you have it. The one and only All Marine Radio head chef. That's right. P. Kimball Holmes. Never heard scalloped potatoes and ham sound that good. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to see if Mike the Gunner is around. Yesterday he didn't feel good. He had to go lay down. Oh, so we haven't heard from him yet. So we'll talk to him coming up next. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project.